Olive leaf extract is an extraordinary source of the beneficial polyphenols found in olive oil and in olive plants. And now you can get all the benefits from a supplement, olive leaf extract, available through drhoffman.com. Olive leaf extract, one of my favorite supplements. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to deal with a very timely subject because, well, it's a matter of man the battle stations, damage control, because yet another article has appeared in a scientific journal that has been picked up uncritically by the mainstream media, and we thought we would provide you with a little bit of an in-depth interpretation of what the article actually means. The subject is resveratrol, and if you've been reading the news these days, you'll see headlines like this: resveratrol may not be the elixir in red wine and chocolate. Also, resveratrol in red wine, not such a health booster. New study questions health benefits of resveratrol. Antioxidant in red wine has no benefit. Compound in red wine and chocolate may not be secret to better life, and so on and so on and so on. It's reverberating across the media and across the internet. And so you may have heard this story, someone who has taken resveratrol over time. Maybe you're questioning your use of this substance. So today we're going to talk to an expert, a guy who really knows his way around resveratrol. He's investigative journalist Bill Sardi. And just on a personal note, I've known Bill Sardi for, well, I don't even want to say how long, several decades. And Bill was single-handedly responsible for introducing me and my radio audience to the benefits of nutrients for eye health. This is actually something that was thought heretical 20, 25 years ago. It was thought that no way, no how can vitamins and supplements have an impact on eye health. Well, Bill courageously championed that proposition, and the rest is history. We now know that there are benefits to many nutrients in terms of preservation of vision. So we owe a debt of gratitude to you, Bill.
Thank you.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you. It is very intelligent to be with you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you and your invitation.
It's my pleasure. Well, I thought, you know, when I read the article, I said, well, I know just the guy who's going to provide us with a reasonable perspective on this. And since you are very, very well-versed on the subject of resveratrol, well, first of all, tell us a little bit about the study in question. What does the study say?
Well, the study went to an area of Italy, Tuscany, where they have a lot of grapes and they have a lot of wine. So pretty much all the alcohol consumption there is wine. Not heavy liquor, that kind of thing. And so they did study these people for a good length of time, up to 9 years, about 783 of them. They started with a few more than that, but these were the ones that they were able to get a urine sample and test the excretion of resveratrol. For those people that aren't familiar with it, resveratrol is a particular molecule in red wine, also in a few other plant sources, but particularly concentrated in wine because it ferments, so it's about 1,000-fold more in red wine than it is, let's say, in grape juice. So that's why they study it. And of course, it's been widely studied as a concentrated higher dose form as an anti-aging agent. So here they are looking at these subjects. They're all over age 65, and they studied them for 9 years. And the conclusion, I use the word, is absurd. And, of course, the reporting is moronic because we've got, well, 2.5 decades of research showing that red wine is the French paradox. Now, we're not talking resveratrol, which is in red wine. We're talking about red wine as a whole. And as the consumption of red wine goes up, the mortality rates drop, and then they rise again. It's called a U-shaped risk curve. So if you're a teetotaler, you're not going to live as long as wine drinkers. If you drink 3 to 5 glasses of that dark red wine that's aged a couple of years, you're going to most likely live a lot longer. And then if it's more than 5 glasses a day, you're actually going to maybe die a little sooner. So was that kind of characteristic U-shaped risk curve shown in this study? No. And are we to erase 2.5 decades of other research because of this study? Now, the part that skews it so we don't have to wait for what goofed it all up was what we were able to tell quickly was, is the group that drank the most wine, 2.6 glasses of wine a day or more, they were 3 times more likely to smoke. Now, 25% of them smoked. So
there's nothing like a nice cigarette to go along with your glass of wine, especially when you live in Tuscany. I mean, it's pretty prevalent. Yeah. Smoking is very prevalent, and it actually continues to be PC in parts of Europe where we're aghast at, you know, I go to foreign countries sometimes and I see how many people smoke in bars, and, you know, it's be unheard of here in the States.
Yeah, it's most, when you think about it, people are kind of chemically, one thing's a stimulant, tobacco, and then the next thing is something relaxes, hits that GABA receptor, we call it, and relaxes people is wine. So they're more likely maybe to rely on substances, tobacco, wine, to, you know, to go up and down and so on in their mood or whatever. The point is that the people that drank the least amount of wine, only 7.7% of those were smoking cigarettes versus 25% in the high wine group. So they say they adjusted for smoking, but if you adjusted for smoking, you'd have to make up for 300% difference in mortality, because the way we look at this, and we've shown this, you know, the French stopped smoking about 15 years ago, just kind of stopped. Not entirely, but they just backed away from it to the point where we now see a lot more centenarians in France, and you can see the beneficial effects of red wine, and they have a lot of people living beyond the age of 100. In fact, the most in the world, they've beaten Japan and quite a few other places on a per capita basis. But
yeah, Jean Calment, the oldest woman in recorded history, was, of course, from France. She, I guess, was 122 or 126, some incredible
122.
Age.
At the time when all this came out a decade ago, David Sinclair, red wine, resveratrol, it mimics the effect of a limited calorie restriction diet, all that headline, front page New York Times, Wall Street Journal. And so this has resonated for about 10 years. And so this is shocking to believe that we're expected to erase the blackboard and think this is the definitive study that says wine is useless. And, of course, it's absurd, but nonetheless, this study is here, and we just don't think they factored for the smoking in this one group. Now we have studies to go look and see in studies, not just what we look and see at the French roughly, but the studies do show if you smoke, it negates a great deal of the effect. And if you are a little bit more up in weight, the smoking negates the effect of the wine on particularly coronary artery disease mortality. So are we ready to throw out our wine glasses or our resveratrol pills? So one, this had nothing to do with resveratrol pills. Nobody, I think less than 1% of the people in this study took dietary supplements of any kind. And, of course, the question is, should you throw away your wine? Well, not necessarily. No, not on this study. And I was a little suspicious of this, and I hate to get into this because this sounds a little, you know, like I'm running a conspiracy theory here. But
black helicopter crew kind of thing,
well,
right?
You know, I happen to be a person who's taken it on the chin with this because I have been involved with David Sinclair in the very beginning from Harvard in attempting to bring a dietary supplement made with resveratrol. I'm not going to make this a commercial for the one I made. I'm just, you know, I know better than that.
No, but I'll mention it. The product that Bill Sardi endorses and recommends is a product called Longevinex, which is actually a product that we give to our patients at the Hoffman Center because I have a lot of confidence in his recommendations. It's a type of resveratrol that we think is very potent. It's actually combined with a couple of select ingredients that seem to augment its bioavailability and potency, and we like it. We think it's a good I take it personally every day, Bill.
Yeah, thank you. I
take one twice daily. Am I taking too much? Am I okay with that?
No, that's fine. I looked at pictures of myself before I started taking resveratrol pills 10 years ago. I actually look older in those pills, in those pictures, those pills, those pictures than I did today. I look much younger. I don't know whether it's the resveratrol pills. I guess we all take something. So I've got my dark hair back and all kinds of things. So it's kind of fun to think that this thing actually is working. And actually, just as a sidebar, yesterday I was at a blood lab helping 40 people give a blood sample. We're conducting a study with the Longevinex pill to see if any kind of resveratrol pill really is an anti-aging pill, and we're used of aging. One is called red blood cell width. The other one is called labile iron. We're sending blood samples to Israel because it's the only place we can get it analyzed. But we're going to show the anti-aging research. Skip the animal, skip the lab dishes. We're going to show you, and we already have preliminary data to show this, but before I get ahead of myself, we'll just, in 6 months, we're going to collect another blood sample, and we hope to set biology on its ear and tell people that there really is an anti-aging pill, and people are dragging their feet on this in the research community as well as the physicians. Not the Hoffman Center. They're way ahead of the game there. But
thank you.
But the you know, I got involved in this 10 years ago, and I was working with David Sinclair. I went up to do write an article for Functional Foods and Nutraceuticals, a magazine in the industry. And then subsequently, he opened a drawer in his desk and said, I have all these resveratrol pills here, and none of them work. What he meant was I use them with yeast cells, and resveratrol makes the yeast cells live longer, but not these pills. And he wanted to know if I knew why. He was the Harvard professor. Why is he looking at me? But anyway,
I could actually see why he might look to you, because while he is a brilliant theoretical scientist, he does not have experience in supplement formulation and manufacture. So he would have to talk to a person about
we
the technical
out,
aspects
they,
of this.
Right. What they were using in the lab was this research-grade stuff that was in a refrigerator, and it was kept at minus 80 degrees, and no light could get to it. Light destroys and degrades the resveratrol. So we tried to mimic that, and we put it into a little pill where it was all, there was no light or air, oxygen, or anything exposed to it. We sent it back to the lab, and it actually tested better than plain resveratrol. That never got published, but that's how I got started in this. But the intrigue of it all was Harvard was listening to all my phone calls and sniped all my emails to David Sinclair, took him in an office and said, we've had other researchers here think they can work with a dietary supplement company, and that you're never going to get tenured if you do.
Right.
And then I took it on the chin in Science Magazine, and David Sinclair said he had a little dispute with me because he had two kids to raise, and he was a man that, like all researchers, they don't have much money. And so I,
Well, let's reframe that for our listening audience. I mean, this is a, we want to come back to the study itself, but
sure.
There's a lot of controversy about resveratrol, and when we're talking about David Sinclair, we're talking about a researcher that is leading a lab that was purchased, and I believe the purchase price was around $700 million.
That's right.
By GlaxoSmithKline. Back in, probably it was in the early 2000s, and it was purchased with the prospect that Sinclair's laboratory would unlock the secrets of aging and unlock the secrets of how to reverse and control many degenerative diseases via the mechanism of what are called sirtuins. And we know that resveratrol is a potent activator of the sirtuin pathway. It's more complicated than that. There are a lot of different sirtuins, and there are a lot of pathways. But in effect, they were placing a big bet on their ability to develop not just resveratrol, because resveratrol, from red wine, there's no big whoop there. And he wasn't really that interested in developing a nutritional supplement line, because if you invest $700 million in a nutritional supplement line, well, good luck to you. Congratulations. You can't patent it, and every other company, since it's a natural molecule, will say that it comes from nature and it's okay to knock off. So the object, correct me if I'm wrong, was to improve on Mother Nature, take resveratrol and tweak it, make it into a designer molecule that would be patentable, would enjoy patent protection, and garner big profits for GlaxoSmithKline.
The problem was they couldn't do it. They developed these new chemical entities, and they failed. And resveratrol was still standing and actually had reduced blood sugar levels in They took it to India. That was an unpublished study, but we happen to know about it. But what happened was is that GlaxoSmithKline actually paid the money to take it off the market, not study it any further, because it would threaten all of pharmacology. After all, it has so much biological action in one molecule. It's an antidepressant, and anti-cholesterol, antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. It goes on and on. So the issue was at the time is that the company that made the pill here was Certrus Pharmaceuticals. Its executives took it on themselves to make it a dietary supplement. It was the same thing as the drug they were working with in the lab, and were selling it to the public. And Glaxo slapped their hands and said, don't do that, and took the supplement off the market when it was the same thing as the drug. Here's where the intrigue is. Their sleight of hand to keep something wonderful from the public is Big Pharma hiding something. Well, let me fast forward for your audience, because we heard this whole story that we've heard in the last couple of days 2 years ago when an outed researcher at the University of Connecticut, Deepak Das, who's since passed away, Deepak Das was said to have conducted fraudulent research, and therefore the French paradox was all off. Wine was all, as Rush Limbaugh said on television, they made it all up. They made it all up. Diddle-up, diddle-up. That's how he does his radio style. But they didn't make it all up. There were researchers in Canada and in Italy and everywhere who showed that if you gave the red wine molecule resveratrol to animals and induced a heart attack, there was very little damage in the heart. And we happened to get in those assays, those little studies, and Longevinix works twice as well as plain resveratrol in protecting the heart from damage. And to understand where we are now, aspirin, the other day, the FDA said, don't even use it. It doesn't prevent heart attacks unless you're a very high-risk patient. And even then, you have to use the high dose, 325 milligram, not the baby aspirin, 81 milligrams, in order to prevent blood clots in the coronary arteries, because which means you're going to be trading one disease for another, because those high-dose aspirin pills cause bleeding, gastric ulcers, and brain hemorrhages. But to go on here, we don't have any effective pill of any kind to prevent damage to the heart and prevent heart attacks. And here's resveratrol standing here with tremendous research done in the animal lab. We haven't been able to move it to the human laboratory yet. In 10 years, not one study in cardiology for resveratrol. Wonder why. And here they are again saying, the French paradox never happened, or it's not real, or let's erase the blackboard. Well, that's absurd.
My take on it, Bill, is that not that these drug companies are trying to promote disease from which they profit. I'm not going to go so far as to say that. Okay. Although inadvertently, I think that they will maintain a huge market for drugs other than resveratrol. But I think their problem was they just didn't know where to put this drug in their repertoire of drugs, their drug offerings, because it's so hard to characterize. You see, we like to prescribe medications for something very, very specific. We like high blood pressure medications. That's very niched. We can demonstrate the benefits. We like drugs that can help to lower cholesterol, that we can demonstrate that the cholesterol was 240 and now it's 190. That's a clear-cut benefit. But a drug that is sort of a panacea-like thing, like resveratrol, it's got such pervasive benefits and it's got sort of subtle protective effects. It's very hard to do an FDA application for, hey, we've got this new drug and it's anti-aging and it protects against Alzheimer's disease. And oh, by the way, it reduces the severity of heart attacks and on and on and on. I mean, those are multiple applications. Each one has to be studied in depth and in detail. And I think that makes it makes a pharmaceutical company reluctant to push this out on the marketplace. And I think they just wrote off their huge investment. Routinely, pharmaceutical companies do this. They'll develop drugs that cost $2, $3 billion to develop, and then, oops, they don't work. And then it's just a write-off. That's the way the business works. You know, they'll spin out drugs. Right. Some are hits and some are misses. And I think that they just kind of just said, well, yeah, we wish we hadn't gotten involved in this.
Well, the resveratrol research continues. And what was alarming, and where you could tell this current study, which was in the JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association Internal Medicine.
Yeah, actually, I want to point out that this is actually in the archives of internal medicine. It's a publication of Journal of the American Medical Association,
right,
but it is not the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Right.
And Bill, as you know, in the past couple of years, there's been a litany of articles that have appeared in this particular journal. I don't know what's got into their water fountain over there, but they've written articles that talk about how it's now settled science that supplements are of no benefit.
Yeah.
It's time to move on from supplements.
Supplements are
no good. They've also published articles that are poorly designed and executed and flawed about harms associated with fish oil, and on and on and on. And I mean, I got to say that when I see something that's coming from that particular publication, the Archives of Internal Medicine, my S detector comes up a little bit.
Right. Well, they only gave one sentence towards the major finding in this study, which is that they did a little mental score, cognition, they call it. And they put people, all these over 65-year-olds, through a mental test. And the rate of mental decline, which was 32.8% among the low wine drinkers, was only 16.4% among the high wine drinkers. So it cut it in half from 32 to 16%. Now, that should have been the major headline, and you knew something was up when they just buried it and gave it one line in the study.
It's like burying the lead. I mean, it is amazing that there was that finding, a halving of the incidence of cognitive decline, major cognitive decline. And that should have been the headline, is that study shows that high consumption of resveratrol-rich wine halves the risk of cognitive decline. And instead, it becomes just a throwout line deep within the study. And by the way, you're the one who spotted this. I mean, who has time to go to the original study? Now, of course, you can get them online. You don't actually have to go deep into the stacks of a library to see these things. But to pore over the study, and then, you probably just slapped yourself on the forehead when you saw that particular
And we don't have any remedies. We have things we try, but we don't have any authentic data that we can rely upon for Alzheimer's and vascular disease in the brain and so on. So here we have a startling finding. It cuts it in half if you drink some wine. So, it makes us think maybe a red wine pill without the alcohol would even work better. And certainly that's important, too. You know, where we're going here is this, there's so much cover-up. And the reason why I say this, because we're on the inside of, we take the brunt of this. My little commercial venture with red wine resveratrol pills, about a year and a half ago, we earned an Emmy Award on television for a startling report from Las Vegas, where the shipping center is for Longevinix. And these people who were helpless, they had gotten injections of medicine in their eyes for something called wet macular degeneration. The medicine didn't work. And now what were they to do? They were just helpless. Along came researchers at the Veterans Hospital in North Chicago, gave them our pill, Longevinix, and the 16 out of the first 17 people got their vision back. Some of them dramatically, some of them only parts of their vision. But it shouldn't have happened, and it did. And, of course, what happened with that? Well, ophthalmology circled the wagons, and they don't even use this, and about 15,000 people who fail the drug therapy now move on to permanent registered blindness when they should give them this pill. It's not FDA approved.
This is, by the way, in the wet macular degeneration.
Our
nutrients that we tend to rely upon for eye protection are mostly targeted towards dry macular degeneration. This is not to say that they may have benefits in wet macular degeneration, but in wet macular degeneration, they generally inject an anti-angiogenesis compound into the eye. It's very expensive, and it's a little icky to get a needle stuck in your eyeball. And this is the only known therapy for slowing the progression of this less common but still very prevalent form of macular degeneration. The dry response, as you know, to zinc and DHA and antioxidants and lutein and zeaxanthin.
Yeah.
And I think everybody knows about that in terms of eye protection. But now we know that there is a treatment, a resveratrol, for wet macular degeneration, and that's very exciting. All right, this is a good inflection point as the ambulances come to take me away here in New York City. Recording a podcast from my apartment in New York City is a risky venture because we are constantly beset with emergency vehicles coming up and down the streets. So let's take a break. When we come back, part two of our discussion of resveratrol and where the latest study went wrong, our guest is Bill Sardi. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.